Welcome to Women Worth Knowing, the radio program and podcast hosted by Cheryl Broderson and Robin Jones Gunn.
Cheryl, we had to come back for part three with Twyla Ludwig, her husband John, and their years in Africa. And I've been thinking about this. So the Lord clearly planted it in both their hearts that they just had this passion for Africa long before they were able to go. And they had lots of opposition. And so when they arrived with two of their three children, they just were able to go right to work, knowing that this is what the Lord had called them to do. But the obstacles, the opposition, and in part two, listeners, I hope you go back and pick up all the things that they were able to do with creativity. John could fix anything. He'd had 8 weeks of dental training, and he became the local dentist. And Twyla had 1 year of obstetrics training, and she then became the doctor. And just, you know, I just have thought several times as you've been talking about this couple that it's not our abilities so much as our availability. We've often heard
I agree.
Just having that heart to let the Lord work through you and use you and the creativity that came from that kind of mindset. So here's the thing that I keep wondering, because the witch doctors were having such a negative effect, the women were receiving terrible treatments for whatever illness from the witch doctor's way of doing things. Was there opposition to what John and Twyla were doing? And now Charles, their son, is very much involved too.
Well, the opposition also came because when they started this school, the men said to the women, none of you will ever be married. We will never choose one of you as our wives because we do not want wives that are smarter than we are. And the witch doctor went around telling people, if you let the women be educated, they will become the heads of the tribe and they will take your power away from you and you will no longer be able to drink beer or smoke whatever. I can't remember what they were smoking or, you know, live these easygoing lives. Yeah. They will expect you to work on the garden with them. I mean, there was quite a bit of opposition. Some of the girls left because they couldn't see a different type of life than the one that they had grown up with. And some of them left because of fear of the doctor.
They left and went to another village?
No, they went back to their tribe and went back, you know, got married.
They left the school.
Mm-hmm. They left the school.
They just didn't see that they could really make a difference with their education. And wow.
Yeah. So now we are in 1938 and they're taking their first furlough. And one of the kind of setbacks that they constantly had was malaria, as you can imagine. Yeah. And their children had malaria several times. John and Twyla had malaria and they lived on a constant diet of quinine. They would take it. And you know what's interesting is they were saying one of the things with malaria is at first you feel this burst of energy and then everything hits. And, you know, I had never heard that before. But when they'd feel all of a sudden a burst of energy, they knew it's time to take the quinine. An episode is coming on. Anyway, they went to America. And I want you to know all that they did in a year and a half. All right. So they used the time not only to speak at churches, raise support, but Twyla also wrote a book called Polished Pillars from Psalm 144:12 about our daughters becoming polished pillars in the house of the Lord to talk about the women that she was working with and how wonderful they were. But she actually wanted to go back to college and finish her training. And one of the things she wanted to do is she wanted to study how to pottery. Oh. And she felt like pottery because there was abundant white clay in Africa that if she could learn pottery and could train the girls, they could also add that to their other skills besides their bakery skills, besides their sewing skills, besides their nursing school skills, they could add this ability to throw and design pots.
Interesting. And you said the white clay was used for the floors.
Yes. With manure, right. But she's gonna learn pottery. And so she decided, to attend Tuskegee University. That's the all-black university founded by Booker T. Washington.
She probably felt more comfortable there than
she's
she
a white woman, and she wants to go to that college. And she's on a train to Alabama, and the Ticketmaster comes and he asks her for her ticket. Well, she's got that huge carpet bag and she can't find it. And he's looking at her.
She still has it. Oh, Mary Poppins bag with everything in it.
She held it all together, like constantly sewing. Sometimes there were safety pins. Oh. But she begins to empty it out. And just like everything but the kitchen sink is in that bag. You know, she's emptying it out. There are books. There's just everything, brush, comb, crazy stuff in that bag. And finally, at the very bottom, she finds the ticket and she hands it to him. And he says, where are you going anyway? And she says, oh, I'm going to go to Tuskegee University. He goes, what? Are you black? And, you know, she did have the one brown eye and the one blue eye. And she didn't say anything. She just waited. And he said, you need to get back with your people. And he sends her to a different carriage.
Oh,
and she said she went there with such joy to be associated with the people that she loved, who had just stolen her heart. And she went back and she said she sat with them, she engaged with them, she just loved it. And she was so, so blessed to be taken as one of her own, the people that she had fallen in love with. So she ended up, while she was at the university, she met George Washington Carver. And the two became close friends for the rest of their lives. In fact, she was known for being a prolific letter writer, writing up to 30 letters a week. Besides everything else that she did, she would do that.
Wow.
While there, she roomed in a dormitory with black women and loved learning and hearing their stories, as well as telling them about life in Kenya and getting them to pray for the women that were still there.
How long did she go there?
She went there until 1940, until it was time to get back on the ship.
And where's John? And
John is going around speaking at churches, raising support, raising awareness of what they're doing.
Yep.
In Africa. I mean, this even that willingness to be separated for a time to do this work. In 1940, now remember, this is World War II.
Right.
Twilight John sailed back to Africa aboard a military freighter loaded with ammunition.
Mm.
And they were the only passengers on board because this is military. And Twyla was the only woman. And several times, the captain of the ship jokingly threatened to throw Twyla overboard for her feisty personality. She was like, let me address these men. Let me tell them the gospel. You don't know what they'll be going into. And so he just had to keep capitulating to her. Yes.
5 foot one, 100 pound.
Yep.
Twyla.
Yep.
Oh.
5 foot two, one eye of blue.
Oh, there we go. 5 foot two.
In 1944 through 1954, was admittedly the happiest and most successful years of John and Twyla's ministry. In that time, she nursed more than, get this, 30,000 patients.
How is that even?
And she would write about these.
Possible.
You know, she would write about this.
Wow.
She built the women's school, finished, expanded to have a training college for men, and she saw the Lord work in exciting ways.
Mm.
She saw these men being raised up to become pastors and Bible teachers and evangelists. She also taught those students how to make pottery. So even though she's nursing, she's also teaching at this Bible college. And then at this point, again, the clothing, the tablecloths, the pottery was sold regularly at these bazaars in Kissimmee and consistently won these prizes.
Mm.
Interestingly enough, when the government of Kenya saw all the good that she was doing, they got behind her and they began to offer support for the school. Because, you know, building the school was one thing.
Yeah.
But how they would support each one of the students was another. And they would have the students, part of their working was to kind of make an investment in their own education. And she found that if the girls invested in their own education, if they were working, they would stay with it. They would persevere.
Interesting. Mm-hmm. And the fruit remained so they could see the benefit of the school.
Absolutely remained. Exactly. So they went on another furlough in 1954. John was by this time 65, and the missionary board wanted him to retire. Mm-hmm. But Twyla was only 56, and she was not ready to retire, but neither was John. And they felt more at home by this time in Kenya than they did in Illinois.
Yeah, not surprising mm-hmm. at all.
But something had happened while they were in America on this last furlough. In Kenya, this rebel tribe had arisen called the Mau Mau. Mm-hmm. And the Mau Mau were really, really extremely dangerous. Mm-hmm. And so everyone's telling John and Twyla, you're too old, you shouldn't go back, you know, don't do it. The Mau Mau are so dangerous. And I'm going to read you what the Mau Mau's core values were. Here it is. If I am sent to bring the head of an enemy or a European and I fail to do so, may this oath kill me. If I fail to steal anything from a European, may this oath kill me. Mm. If I know of an enemy of our organization and I fail to report it, may this oath kill me. If I am ever sent by my leader to do something big for the House of Kikuyu and I refuse, may this oath kill me. If I worship any leader but Jomo Kenyatta, may this oath kill me.
Mm.
And that was the oath that they were, that these men were taking. Some of their ceremonies that evolved were so terrible that Charles Ludwig was saying, you can't even write out the things that they did and the things that they did to others and the things that they did to each other. Quite a few men and women were killed by the Mau Mau. It was kind of like this movement. And it was seen by some as a very patriotic movement. But Twyla was steadfast in her refusal to stay in America. And Dad said, if the Mau Mau want to kill me, I'll be waiting. Heaven is only one step away. Now, others said, okay, take a gun. You've got to have a gun. And both John and Twyla refused to have a gun. The whole time they served in Africa, they refused to have a gun. They would not have a gun. They said, the Lord's going to protect us. That's why we're here. So she wrote this. I am more convinced than ever before that the condition Kenya is in today can only be corrected as we work with God through faith in the blood of the Lord Jesus Christ, which was shed on Calvary as the only remission of sins. Every condition laid out by Paul to Timothy concerning the conditions of the people in the last days is represented here. The form of religion has failed to bring about the changed lives necessary to bring forth a change necessary to transform lives whose background is one of sins, lies, adultery, deception, cunningness, and hypocrisy.
Mm. Wow.
I know. So they went back without guns, without protection, went back to serve the people. But about this time, the mission station said, you know, we really want to open up another school, another mission. And the government said, we'd really like you to open up another school, another mission. And so they said, we'd like you to do one in Nairobi because it's the capital. So they went to Nairobi, they're praying. And this very wealthy man approaches them and says, I have this property that I would like to give you. And it's just slightly outside of Nairobi. It was on a plateau. And I want you to build a school like you've built before. And so she set about, she and John with plans, they built 22 buildings on that new place and started a second school.
Wow.
One day she's on the train because now they have to commute between the two schools at times, you know, and she's still nursing. He's still doing dentistry, but they're also teaching at both these schools. Mm. And, you know, they set up a hospital at one school. They prayed. She was praying fervently for a doctor, and the Lord did supply a doctor. One of the Kenyans who became a doctor came back to serve. And so anyway, they're doing this commute, and a British soldier comes and sits on the train. And she says, you know, hello and something. And he said, I know who you are. And she said, you do? And he said, yes, you're Twyla Ludwig. He said, you're very known to all of us British soldiers. And she said, well, how is that? And he says, well, unbeknownst to you, we've been following you, watching over you, and guarding you.
Oh, wow.
And she took that as a sign from the Lord.
Yeah.
That he was with them. And she was so glad she didn't have a gun.
Yes.
Because she didn't want a gun. She never wanted to look like a threat to or make any Kenyan an enemy.
Mm-hmm.
She wanted them to all know they were welcome and they were friends. She told this story one time of this wild man who came for treatment. And, you know, she took the jiggers out of his foot. I think there were some over 100 jiggers that she, you know, took each one out of his foot, soaked it, and spent all this time with him. And he said, you know, oh, mama, because they all called her mama. Oh, mama, I want to be a Christian, but I can't. And she said, why not? And he said, because I do not have the clothes to be a Christian.
Oh, no.
And she said to him, you don't need clothes to be a Christian. He wants your body. He wants your heart. He doesn't care about your clothes. And so with that, he said, then I want to become a Christian. So she led him to the Lord, and he went away. She didn't see him for years. And one year she was doing a rally, and there were literally 10,000 people at this rally that would come, all the people that they administered to over the years. Remember, she treated over 30,000 patients just in a 10-year span. So they're all coming to this rally, a lot of the graduates of the school all being touched by this little woman and her husband. And as she's speaking, there are two rather large Kenyan women that are kind of down below. They have been graduates of the school, and they're just kind of, you know, there as kind of the women that graduated, and they're dressed in their finest clothes that they have made. And all of a sudden, this old man in a loincloth comes running up the aisle, and everyone's like, oh, what should we do about him? And it turns out he's the man that she led to the Lord. And he's like, oh, mama, God is so good. I've been walking with him. I've been telling everybody about him. And when he talked to her, he put his loincloth in front to cover the front of his privates.
Yes.
And then as he was leaving, he switched it around so she wouldn't see his back privates either.
Oh, dear.
In front of all these people at this huge rally. She was just like, well, praise the Lord. You know, John just thought it was hilarious because he was the rascal.
Yes.
But just, you know, nobody was too little for them at all.
Mm.
In 1958, they celebrated their 50th anniversary as a married couple in Kenya. They didn't want to go home to celebrate their anniversary.
Wow.
They wanted to celebrate it in Kenya because they loved it. And all their children, Fern, Charles, and Rosalind, came back to celebrate it with them.
Wow.
Charles was now a pastor in the United States. In fact, he's written quite a few books about his adventure in Africa. I mean, he ended up loving his life.
Mm.
But
don't you just love that? How many missionary kids, when you hear that, they loved that that's where they got to grow up and everything they got to experience.
Yes. Well, when you hear him talk about eating ants and locusts and how much he loved it, you know, and how he loved his friend Samwali, you know, one of his dearest and best friends, even though Samwali, like, loved the witch doctor and followed. I mean, Charles just said, you know, he just liked Samwali. He just loved him. And He didn't try to evangelize or tell him anything differently. He just listened and was fascinated by his stories and his life and the things that Samwali would show him and taught him how to do. He loved it, all things Kenyan. In 1958, as I said, they were celebrating this, and their son Charles officiated the ceremony. And crazy enough, he had them renew their vows.
Oh,
one of the things he stressed is when it came to Twyla, he said, do you promise to obey John? And she just kind of looked at him like, you know,
well, there could be a first time.
Yes. She had always been kind of the one to hear from the Lord and be the leader in all things. And so he said it again until she, you know, nodded. As soon as the ceremony was done, the children had all gone in together to, you know, this is 1958, things have improved, to get them a beautiful hotel room for the night because they were still living in primitive conditions, yeah. You know, still living in brick buildings on these missionary compounds, mm-hmm. albeit they now had enough wood to fire up the kiln and to have stronger bricks in these houses. But Twyla went right back to work selling some of the wares at the bazaar with her girls. And the children had to forcibly take her away from the bazaar to make her, you know, enjoy her time at this hotel. She's about 68 years old at this time. You know, 68. So 1960 was a very hard year for John. He was constantly ill. He's 79 at this time. Mm-hmm. And he's not doing very well health-wise. And Twyla continued to work hard with all of her energy and sometimes only getting a tiny bit of rest during the night. Everyone expected John would go first because his health was so precarious.
Yeah.
So they thought, they knew Twyla would be all right without John. Mm-hmm. However, on December 14th, 1960, she died in her sleep, Twyla did, from an aneurysm, unknown aneurysm. They said that John was crestfallen, but he refused to leave Africa.
Really?
Because of Twyla's love and his love for Africa. And he said, you know, I'm more used to life here mm-hmm. than I am, you know, in Illinois. I don't want to go back. And Twyla, according to her wishes, was buried in her beloved Kenya. She wanted to be mm-hmm. buried. And one of the things that she had done is she started having gravestone markers made for all the Christians who had died in order to honor their Christianity. And she felt like they were like stones of remembrance.
So
there was a gravestone that was made for her to mark her time and her accomplishments in Africa, Kenya especially, to serve as an inspiration for the women that would see it. There are so many stories, and I've only told just a few, about the many people that she personally nursed back to health and to Christ. And I love how this one woman, as you were saying before, this one 5'2", 100-pound woman, I think she might have gained weight in Africa because she looks a little bigger than that in the pictures, was able to do so much with so little immaterial wealth or influence for the kingdom of God.
And prayed it through.
Prayed it through.
Everything. Mm-hmm. Every obstacle. And
deficit.
What's so beautiful of them staying in Kenya, in Nairobi, and building the 22 buildings for the school there that the mission and the government asked them to do, is even though it was during the Mau Mau uprising, not every Kikuyu person was in sympathies with this rebellious group.
Nope.
And so it's kind of like running to the front lines because especially Nairobi, what an area. And even I remember when we were in the area of Karen, which is outside of Nairobi, and that's where you think of the movie Out of Africa.
Right, beautiful.
Karen Blixen's house is there. You can tour, and they named the whole town Karen for her. So that influence of the imperialists, of the colonizing from the Europeans and that hatred that grew up, and to see where those pockets were around Nairobi. And yet, here they were coming in and saying, but this is what we are called to do. And we, even though this mandate is put out against us for what we're trying to do to settle here, it's for the benefit of the people,
particularly
those who, same tribe, but that the Kikuyans who weren't in sympathy with the Mau Mau. I mean, it's sort of like running into the battle and being on the front lines because the Lord of Heaven's armies is on your side, and he sends the British troops as backup.
But, you know, some of the people that associated with them, because they had associated with the white couple, were also killed. And that was part of the pain and part of the issue, too. So it was not easy to stay and persevere, but they believed in heaven. You know, I was so inspired by Twilight, again, to pray through a thing and receive either a word from God, the provision, the healing, or the deliverance, and then stand on the promises of God.
Amen.
Thank you for listening to Women Worth Knowing with Cheryl Broderson and Robin Jones-Gunn. For more information on Cheryl, visit CherylBroderson.com or follow her on Instagram or Facebook. For more information on Robin, visit RobinGunn.com or follow her on Instagram or Facebook. Join us each week for a lively conversation as we explore the lives of well-known and not-so-well-known historical and contemporary Christian women. We hope you've enjoyed today's episode. Make sure you rate us on your podcast app, subscribe, and share it with a friend. Thank you again for listening to Women Worth Knowing with Cheryl Broderson and Robin Jones-Gunn.